This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Ray Bjorklund. Ray is the president of Birch Grove Consulting and is one of the leading analysts, procurement budget analysts around town here. Ray, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Roger.
Well, it's great to have you. And, you know, we're going to talk about the federal market. I've been doing a series of shows focusing on it. And, you know, I guess we'll start with, you know, we've now lived through sequestration at least for three quarters of this fiscal year, I guess, so to speak, if you could put it that way. Has it turned out the way you thought, and how has it shaped the market so far this fiscal year?
I've been thinking a lot about sequestration and what the effects really are on the government and spending overall. Now, obviously, we're speaking to many people in industry right now who have been very nervous about sequestration for a number of months, many months, in fact. And at the risk of offending them, I'm going to say that it's not the dollar value of sequestration as an impact to the government, because we're talking about a few cents off every dollar. And I don't want to diminish it and say that it's just not serious, because it is a very serious impact to industry relationships with the government, and also to the government itself, because of things like furloughs and inability to achieve military readiness. But what I want to say that instead of the dollar value, instead of the magnitude, what sequestration has done is constipate the procurement process. And you know, that is really the most serious effect.
So can you talk about what do you mean by constipate the process? And
well, it's a process that's already sluggish because of the inability to get timely appropriations from Congress, because of an acquisition workforce that still isn't up to snuff in all places, and because there are new rules and policies and regulations that are coming out of Congress and the administration. And consequently, you know, we have a system that just doesn't work very well. And so there's a lot of slowness, a lot of hiccups. Now, when you add in all of the uncertainty that comes with sequestration, that uncertainty has caused the government, certainly, to be very cautious and in some cases to go through fits and starts as they move forward on an acquisition or a procurement, which means they might start something with good intentions, and then when their comptroller says, we don't have the funds, they have to stop it or slow roll it, and all of that kind of activity just make a very slow process.
So, yeah, and I think to your point that what we've seen out there is that agencies are, you know, at the program level, you know, the funds are allocated and whatnot, you know, that's later and later. And this year it's even later than, you know, where you have the continuing resolution.
Yes.
At least with the continuing resolution, you know, like you can do X, right?
To a certain extent. But see, we have an administration, and of course, Congress stuck its head in the sand. The administration stuck its head in the sand. And to some degree, contractors stuck their head in the sand when it came to sequestration. So particularly with the administration, who chose not to develop any contingency plans, was sort of caught, you know, with
Were they sort of playing chicken?
There was a little of that. Right. I mean, there was an expectation that Congress would, in fact, take the spirit of sequestration, which was originally, in fact, to cause congressional action to occur. That was really its original purpose. You know, but what has happened, Congress chose not to do anything and stick its head in the sand. Then the administration was caught with their, I shouldn't say pants down, but, you know, they were caught in a situation where they
Well, that's happened in other situations,
yeah.
Right?
They were caught in a very bad situation where, you know, they weren't even sure how many dollars they had because of slowness in appropriations and with the, you know, the inability to know how many dollars are available at any one instance in time so that you know how many dollars you have for procurement. You can't go forward with a procurement, put an RFP or solicitation on the street unless you got the dollars in the bank.
Right. And that, and you know, in turn, the companies are on, you know, from their perspective, you know, where is this program? What's going to happen? Do I dedicate a team to it? Do I maintain that team while I wait to see if they actually get the money? That increases cost too, right?
Well, absolutely, because, and that's typically in the bid and proposal cost, B&P. And, you know, that's a cost that the taxpayer ultimately is, you know, incurring, because that kind of infrastructure, those overhead costs, to some degree, are passed on in the pricing for future work.
Right. So the system's constipated. Now, I have to ask, be careful with this, but so we're in the fourth quarter. Are things like, have things loosened up, so to speak? And we could really have fun with this, but.
Yeah. And, you know, there's some people out there, some pundits are saying, you know, there's going to be lots of spending. You know, even more so than usual. Well, there is going to be the normal end of year activity in the fourth quarter. But when, you know, I sat down and looked at the actual outlays of the government, and I would pick on DOD because they're the biggest player in this,
sure,
and the ones
sure.
that are potentially the most hurt. And so I looked at the specific accounts and looked at the outlay pattern for 2012 and now for fiscal 2013. And guess what? They're just about where they're supposed to be as of the end of June in terms of spending.
Surprise, surprise, huh?
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, guess what? It isn't because of sequestration. It is, well, it is a factor that's involved in this. But the principal thing is, you know, the government was planning to spend less money anyway.
Right. Right.
And so, you know, contractors out there looking for some kind of big year-end bonus, they're not going to see that because there wasn't supposed to be money to spend anyway on contracts.
Right. Well, how does it, you know, there's some concern, you know, and you see DOD keeps adjusting the furloughs.
Like
I
yes.
think, you know, I think last week they talked about, you know, shortening the number of furlough days.
Yeah.
I get some sense that there might be concern that, you know, they could have money left over and they've furloughed folks. Is that a real possibility?
I think that there's, in some accounts, that's a little bit of a possibility. And, you know, I'm sorry that people have to be furloughed. I mean,
yeah, it's a horrible thing.
Poor civil mm-hmm. servants who have been now suffering through a couple of years with pay freezes and then, you know, having to be furloughed on top of that. So that, too, is adding to the constipation of the system, because sometimes you've got procurement people that... you know, choose not to answer the phone or choose not to be available because it is their furlough day. And of course, they've been under direction, you know, not to volunteer. They are not supposed to be volunteering their work to get
right.
the job done. So, all that furlough activity is causing, you know, a little bit of pent up demand or say, you know, possibility for a little bit of dam burst. But, you know, things only go through the procurement system just so fast.
Right.
And because of, you know, lead right. time required to get the job done correctly. Yeah. You know, so the thing that's really scary, if there is going to be some additional, say, heightened year-end spending, the thing that's really scary to me is the risk of making mistakes.
Sure.
You know, in the procurement system. That's what's really, really scary. And so that could be yet another, you know, byproduct of sequestration.
Well, you know, if to the extent there is, you know, additional spending or even, you know, just your normal, you know, fourth quarter spend, how, You know, how do agencies navigate that? Is it use of multiple pre-existing contract vehicles, government-wide contract vehicles? What have you seen?
I don't have a way of really measuring that right now, but yes, when you look at PALT or procurement administrative lead time for the various agencies, you know, if you look at the, normally it's a table, it's roughly a page long. And, you know, clearly if you're using an existing vehicle, whether that's MAS or if it's an IDIQ, it will be a shorter cycle.
Right. And on that note, sorry, I didn't give you any lead time there, Ray, but we do have to take a break. But when we come back, we'll be talking more to Ray Bjorklund, president of Birch Grove Consulting, and we'll talk, dive a little bit into the fourth quarter profile and what it looks like, and also talk a little bit about how contractors should be positioning themselves. And you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
The mission of government involves critical efforts to improve national defense, economic security, health services, and citizens' lives. The strategy and technology consultants of Booz Allen Hamilton are proud to help government address cyber threats, reform the financial system, modernize infrastructure, and protect our nation. For nearly 100 years, Booz Allen has partnered with clients to deliver results that endure. To see Booz Allen's ideas in action, visit BoozAllen.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Ray Bjorklund. Ray is president of Birch Grove Consulting, and he focuses on the budget, procurement, spend, all things federal dollars, I guess. Is that fair to say, Ray?
That's fair to say, but I look at other aspects of the government, too.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we can talk more about policies and procedures and the constipation of the process if you want to, but right now, let's talk about hopefully a loosening up of the procurement channels, and that's in the fourth quarter, and I think we started to talk a little bit about that when we had to take the break, and so I'll just open it up. What are you seeing so far in the fourth quarter, and what do you expect?
Well, as we said in the first segment, constipation. It's still a very, very slow process, and I don't expect certainly not a lot of new things to come out. Those kinds of activities or requirements that have been planned, they've got to be in line with the requirements of administrative lead time. And, yes, you can, write a definitive contract on the last day of the year.
I think that's been done before, right?
Yes, you can do that, but it's not a very wise thing to do usually because there's a risk, again, of making those mistakes.
Right. To your point, I know GSA has cutoff dates when people can send requirements to them, and I think they've already, hit some of those cutoff dates, if not.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. But, therein again, if you do have an existing contract vehicle, then, the cutoff dates can be later and later, whether it's a schedule or a IDIQ.
And is that, we touched on a little in terms of the strategy agencies use at the end of the year, is it primarily they focus on pre-existing, because of that lead time issue, pre-existing contracts?
Yeah, yes, it is. But, if there is a little bit of money left over in accounts, there is that opportunity to build out a definitive contract because, if it's simplified acquisition, or if it's something else that's relatively small, even down to the micro purchase level, it can be done pretty late in the cycle.
Right. So, so where are we? I guess I'm trying to think, okay, so we got the this fiscal year, we're in the fourth quarter. It's been a constipated sort of process this year, and hopefully it will loosen up some. But what are we, budget-wise and into the first quarter of 14, what does that look like? I've lost the bubble on this. Is it more sequestration? Is it continuing resolution? And what does it mean for contractors?
Well, it's both. Continuing resolution, sequestration.
All of the above.
All of the above. And what does it mean for contractors? We can see right now as Congress is going on its, late summer break.
Right.
That, there's no appropriations agreements yet. And there was never even a budget agreement although they were kind of close. And, you know, a lot of the appropriations, I try to track through the bills coming out of the House and Senate. And so there are some good things there. You look like Veterans Affairs, for instance, as a department. And they're getting almost everything they requested.
Sure.
You know? Mm-hmm. But there are differences in the bills. And consequently, you know, the House and the Senate, you know, don't choose not to agree on those. And then we got this other thing called the debt ceiling, which is looming again. Which will create other kinds of rifts between the Republican House and the Democratic Senate. And, you know, so we're going to end up with a continuing resolution. Duh. I mean,
right. Sure.
Every year. But then sequestration, there's another cut that occurs automatically based on the Budget Control Act, the way it's written today. So, you know, is administration planned for that in their budget request? Yes, no, sort of. I mean, they didn't even reflect the 2013 sequester. You know, so it's an awkward situation, and you know the administration is still hoping, as many of us are hoping, that we can stop playing around with the sequester games and just do cuts when they make good sense. So what does this all mean for contractors? Unfortunately, contractors, you know, some of them are really good at reading the tea leaves.
Sure.
Some aren't. And many of them have expectations of their shareholders for earnings per share and for reasonable margins. So companies who have been paying attention to this for the last couple of years, and I don't mean just the sequester. I mean
the overall budget profile, the way
budget,
things are going.
The budget has been declining. Yeah. The contract spending budget has been declining for a number of years, even before sequestration was kicked in. So those companies that didn't put their head in the sand and been paying attention to it have been restructuring, which usually means, and just like you know, one large company last week has closed a deal on selling some real estate in Tyson's Corner. Now, other large companies have you know, gone through cuts of 1,000 here, 800 there, 500 there.
Yeah, yeah, buyouts or early retirement packages, things like that.
And so they're reducing their footprint, if you will, whether it's a combination of people and systems and real estate, to the point where they can, you know, retain a reasonable margin and still look like an attractive company, even though they're smaller and even though there's less top line revenue. So
Roy, how, you know, what's the glide plane here in terms of the budget, you know, the procurement spend? How has it, you know, you hear a lot about, oh, this is historically we've been able to cut 10% or whatever out of the procurement spend. You know, what are your numbers? I trust your numbers, Roy.
Thank you for that vote of confidence. Yes. I try to look out for a 10-year cycle. And you, because a budget, and that's usually what we have to deal with, is a budget. A budget is a form of policy that eventually gets influenced by politics. It is a political statement to begin with, but then the politics of appropriations, you know, just makes it really messy to look way, way out there. But if you take into account the longer term requirements of the Budget Control Act to sequester a big chunk of money each year for 10 years, you know, there is that decline that we're anticipating associated with that. And overall, it's about a net of 5 to 8% each year for at least the next 7 years. That's painful.
Right. That starts to add up after, you know, a couple of years, right?
Right. And, you know, so there are companies that may choose not even to be in this kind of business anymore, not let alone restructuring and cutting expenses, but just choose not to be in the federal market anymore because it's going to be less attractive.
Right. Well, are there areas where you see growth? I mean, you mentioned, you know, like the VA and, you know, care of our veterans. That's an area where there seems to be consensus around ensuring, you know, there's the resources to do that. Are there other areas where the budget, you know, moving forward, just in terms of the priorities of the federal government, would potentially be opportunities for growth.
Well, let's distinguish overall top-line growth versus growth in contract spending. And you could look at the Department of Homeland Security, and while they have reduced the overall size of their budget, they've also done a lot of insourcing. And so there's actually even less potential for future potential for contract spending in DHS. But, you know, that aside, various aspects of Homeland Security, certainly to include cyber,
right,
big time,
mm-hmm,
you know, is going to be still a growth area. Big data analytics associated with even cyber and the intelligence community in a larger sense will be a really important area. And to the extent that that even goes over into the social services areas, whether it's delivery of healthcare or delivery of benefits and entitlements, you know, that those kinds of big data systems, that's going to be somewhat important.
So health IT, and on that, actually, Ray, and we do have to take a break right now, but when we come back, we'll continue this discussion. And my guest today is Ray Bjorklund. He is president of Birch Grove Consulting, and you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Ray Bjorklund, president of Birch Grove Consulting and budget analyst extraordinaire. Ray, you know, when we took the break, we were talking a little bit about, we started to talk about, you know, potential areas where the budget maybe, I guess I'd put it, less impacted. How's that?
Yes.
As opposed to growth areas. But one that I think, you know, with the Affordable Care Act and implementation of and the new healthcare system, you know, health IT, do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do. I've actually been looking at this lately. You know, going back to the stimulus bill, that's where high tech as an act was embedded in the stimulus bill, which really encourage and incentivize health IT, which was not really meant for the government's health IT per se, but more for incentivizing the national healthcare system to embrace health IT. But health IT has got a very specific statutory definition because of that. And there are, you know, within the administration, within the executive branch, you know, there are two very large healthcare delivery systems, and then there's one that's smaller. And the two large ones are VA, Military Health, and then the Indian Health Service is another delivery point for health services. Those are the three largest. There's a few others. There has been somewhat associated with that High Tech Act back in 2009. There has been some growth in actual health IT spending to enhance those delivery systems. And in VA, for instance, you know, the VISTA system, which really handles more, it's a very old system, but handles transactions within the internal VA healthcare system, is now being fed much more by higher technology, like, you know, imaging systems that can digitize and produce attachments that go into the system. So there is that effect. And then the Affordable Care Act put a little bit of acceleration on that. But the most significant thing that came out of Affordable Care in terms of healthcare spending by the federal government on its own behalf was for the insurance exchanges.
Okay.
Or insurance marketplaces, depending on who you listen to.
Who you talk, yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, which has caused a big surge in spending over the last couple of years of about $275 million. Well, you know, after that's over, after those healthcare exchanges, the ones that are facilitated by the federal government on behalf of state governments, which is about, I think, 34 state governments now that are looking to the feds for that help. There's a lot of money that's been spent, but it's like, get those systems in place, and then it kind of goes away. So their Affordable Care is not really creating a lot more spending. There's some associated with HIPAA, the Health Insurance Portability Accountability Act, that is affiliated with Affordable Care and has now is going to require the government to spend a few more dollars, but we're not talking big dollars here.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you asked the question, because I had visions of, all kinds of, money all over the place, and, there wouldn't be any constipation there. Right. So,
well, because, serving the veterans, and as you said, that's a very high priority.
Right. So. Hey, another thing I wanted to ask you about the last segment is we talked a little bit about companies and how they're responding, in terms of, efficiency in their own operations, let's say, and whether they're, having to do layoffs in some instances. What about the prospects for mergers and acquisitions, moving forward?
There are a lot of people out there that track it much more effectively than I do. But my observations so far are that the capital equity that's necessary to facilitate mergers, unless a very large company has a big cash reserve. But even when they have big cash reserves, they often turn to the private equity community and say, hey, could we get some more money to leverage this purchase? Those companies out there that are providing those resources, those private equity firms, are not as interested in this market anymore. So they're seeing downside, they're seeing risk. And consequently, they're not as anxious to put money into it. So for those larger...
So that's sort of part of the impact of sequestration, right? If you had and continuing resolutions, if you had a clear blueprint moving forward of how the government was going to basically right-size itself, given, where we're going, as opposed to these fits and starts and whatnot, you might see more interest in, from the private equity firms. Am I right? Or
yeah, I believe you would. I believe you would see more interest. But there is still M&A activity, particularly for, the smaller firms, as smaller firms are being targets for larger companies to buy competency or buy customer or buy market share. And so that kind of activity, I think, is still going to go on fairly good clip, because it usually doesn't take a lot of private equity from the outside. But again, there are a lot of people in town that are pretty good at assessing the M&A situation. And that's
right.
Just my observation.
Yeah. Do you see, with, the focus on, let's say the Better Buying Power Initiative, and you've got Secretary Hagel saying that, I guess, as I understand it, they may be cutting 20% of their headquarters, operation. I'd like to get your thoughts on that. And also, what does that mean for service contractors who support DOD?
Let's talk a little bit about Better Buying Power first. As I've read version 1 and version 2, and I've seen the various pronouncements from senior DOD leadership, I don't see anything new in those documents. They are very important principles that have existed for decades in the procurement system. And Better Buying Power, it just, really encourages the procurement community in DOD, and it does ripple off to the other outside of DOD as well. But it really encourages those people in those positions to reflect on the principles of procurement.
Right. And to think. That's the big thing, especially 2.0.
And think, right. Exactly. To reflect on them and to think and to rationalize, why are they doing this? Why are they making these choices? Which the choices are things that nobody's saying change the FAR or the DFARs.
Right.
But it's just, it's the system. So that's my comment on that. Now, you know, the other things that DOD is doing, where Secretary Hagel is suggesting a 20% reduction in headquarters. The cynic in me.
No, you're not. No, Ray, you're not going to be get cynical on me, are you?
Cynic in me says there will probably be a slight increase in the size of defense agencies and direct reporting units.
Okay. Explain that one to our listening audience.
Okay. This is when you look at DOD headquarters, and you look at the many functions that they do perform. You know, over time it does get bloated, and everybody recognizes that. You add people here, you add people there. You might add some service contract support, and it gets a little bit bigger. Many of those functions can be performed by the defense agencies, some of which have actually been created to take some of the headcount out of headquarters over time.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I got it now.
So while, you know, headquarters is headquarters. That's right. The Office of the Secretary of Defense. And yes, we probably will see some significant reductions there in not only, civilian headcount, but in contractor support. But a lot of that work still needs to be done. I'm going to say all of it, but some of it needs to be done. And it can be picked up by defense agencies like DCMA, like DISA, mm-hmm. like the human resources activity.
Sure. So I see we've got, we're going to be moving things around in boxes here, right?
Right. And to some degree, it is kind of moving things around within one box. But to some degree, it does make a little bit better economic sense, because moving functions to the outside of the Washington area is
cheaper.
Sometimes a little cheaper.
Yeah. And speaking of money, we do have to take our last break, Ray. But when we come back, we'll be talking more to Ray Bjorklund, president of Birch Grove Consulting. And we'll talk maybe a little bit, get his take on, whether low price technically acceptable is taking over the procurement universe. And a little bit about GSA's role in the procurement system and its market share. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
This is an important time for the federal government, a chance for agencies to do things differently. How will you help shape your future? Turn to Deloitte. With our private sector insight and public sector experience, we'll help you rethink, reduce, and restructure, and turn resolve into results, so you can see what's possible and make it happen. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. Wherever you need to go, Deloitte sees you there.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Ray Bjorklund, president of Birch Grove Consulting, budget analyst extraordinaire, and procurement analyst too. Right, Ray? A man of many, many talents. Ray, so, when we took the break, I threw out the teaser there about low price technically acceptable. I know you have some interesting thoughts on that. Is it taking over the procurement universe?
I don't think so. And it is I'll call it a problem. And this almost gets back to the last segment. We were talking about better buying power.
Right.
Where a lot of the procurement folks have not reflected on what the principles are. Because there's nothing wrong with LPTA. I mean, it's something that's specified in the FAR. Under the right circumstances, there's nothing wrong with lowest price technically acceptable.
Right, and Better Buying 2.0, I think, does a pretty good job articulating, the guidance as to think about what the right circumstances are for the particular product or service you're buying.
Right, so when you look at, over the last about 3 years, look at the solicitations that are posted in FedBiz Ops.
And I know you've done this, Ray.
Okay? Yes.
I know you have. Okay.
Yeah, there are thousands of instances that occur in any one year, thousands of instances of use of LPTA. And, if this may be the cynic coming out of me again, but, sometimes I'm thinking that the business development community and contract among the contractors is sometimes looking for a reason why things aren't going well, back to this constipated system. And, you know, LPTA, you know, might mean you're going to lose a deal because you can't price it aggressively enough. But that aside, of those thousands of instances that occur each year, there are only a handful of them that are really, by my judgment, inappropriate. And inappropriate often when the government is anticipating buying a very complex or complicated suite of services that have not been purchased before, not been purchased in this particular configuration or a scale, you know, and consequently, you know, there's risk.
Sure.
And you're really not supposed to be using LPTA in situation of risk.
Right, where there's that uncertainty, or you do, you know, the mission requires, you know, I guess you could argue a higher level quality or capability. It's one of those tough things.
Mission criticality.
Yeah.
You know, every contractor delivers quality, right?
Right. Yes, okay. That's true. But it is. Gets to the old thing, like, what's your strategy for doing that? What makes most sense for your particular circumstances? Because you could, you know, in some instances, you could raise the quality and, you know, mandatory requirements and still base it on price, or there might be appropriate to do a trade-off. And I think better, like as I mentioned, I think Better Buying Power 2.0 does a pretty good job.
Yes.
You know, encouraging that thinking process, that analytical process. So, Ray, I also wanted to talk to you a little bit about GSA. And, you know, in particular, there's been a lot of discussion in the news about GSA's market share recently. And, you know, according to GSA, it has about a 12% market share and a goal of achieving 17% by the end of this fiscal year.
And 90% in 10 years.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess, what are your, can you talk about their market share and what is it first?
I don't know where they get their numbers. And
really?
That's what really is puzzling me. And I haven't read every scrap of information coming out of GSA, which might reveal some of that. But, you know, I've read some of the higher level pronouncements and some of the things recorded in the trade press, where GSA is asserting that they're achieving, you know, 12%. But, are they adding up schedule sales and, say, government purchase card purchases, transactions, and fleet activities, and travel card, and IDIQs to include the
IT ones?
IT and telecommunications?
Sure.
Okay, if they're adding up all that, you know, and the actual contract spend is north of $700 billion, I don't think the numbers match.
Okay.
So,
I think they take like weapon systems and stuff out, but.
Then that's not fair. And I know that in principle, the schedules program, the MAS program, you know, is supposed to be based on commerciality. And
sure.
Of course, weapon systems are, there are aspects of them that are commercial, but most
right.
of it isn't. So why are they taking it out? If they think they can achieve, you know, they could achieve part of the weapon systems buy, you know, through programs like Alliant, even networks to some degree, you know, could be used to satisfy weapon systems requirements. You know, so that, is that really fair? And you know, I don't know. It's puzzling. Now, GSA does have great opportunity to increase their market share by making their contract vehicles much more attractive to buyers and to customers and to contractors. And they've been doing some of that. Some of that's improving. But, you know, that's, you know, it's like if you build it and you build it well,
right.
then people will come.
Right. So, and to your last point there, with regard to, you know, making their vehicles more attractive, there's been a lot of this focus on, and I think a lot of it's driven by OPP, you know, focus on pricing and pricing at a contract level. And I'm just wanted to get your thoughts. I mean, there's pricing at the contract level and in the multiple award contract world, right? There's the multiple award contracts. You get one of those. Then you have the basically an opportunity to compete for the for specific requirements at the task order or delivery order level. Does it make sense to be focusing so much on the contract price, or to your point, I mean, I'm putting words in your mouth, but to the point of making your programs more attractive, how do you enhance that competition at the order level?
Well, that is the point. That's where the competition should occur. And, you know, if you look at the, again, the principles of the FAR, where the government's expecting or requiring that the taxpayer get the best possible deal, you do that through competition. That's really the essence of, you know, I mean, why you encourage competition. So you're going to get a better price. Just like if you're going to have, you know, two landscaping companies come to your house, you know, you want to get the better price and you're really competing the two. And that's at that order level. It's not what they cite on their websites as being their hourly rates or their project rates.
Right. It's in response to a specific requirement. I think,
yes.
I mean, I think one of the things that's getting lost here is that, you know, all these multiple award contracts do provide you opportunity to compete for specific requirements. And the schedules, just use that as an example, you know, it's a guaranteed minimum of $2,500. Then you get an opportunity consistent with statute and regulation to compete for orders. And, you know, and everybody has a chance for orders over $150,000. Well, I mean, I think Congress has spoken when they passed a law requiring that competition at the order level that, hey, that's where the focus, that's where the rubber meets the road. That's where there's real requirements. And to the extent there's now this move to, you know, focus on price, it's almost like they're undermining, you know, the entire structure, statutory, regulatory structure, and even the investments they've made in IT, like eBuy, to support it. And any final thoughts on that?
I would agree with that, that it does seem to fly in the face of the principles of the system, the principles of the competition that come out of the system. Yes, one of those vehicles is a license to hunt.
Right.
And, you know, you've got
a license, I like to say a license to compete.
Yeah, right. Well, exactly.
Right.
You know, but hunting is competing.
Right, right.
But yeah, exactly. And, you know, that's where, like you said, the rubber meets the road. That's where that competition should be occurring, is at the order level. You know, and why would a company publish its prices, in which they do under schedule,
right,
and expect that to be the final price when GSA encourages and almost requires every person who places an order in the government to seek a discount price?
You're absolutely right, Ray. And on that point, we're going to have to end the show. I want to thank my guest, Ray Bjorklund, president of Birch Grove Consulting, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30 only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.